The US, EU and their allies imposed unprecedented sanctions against Russia as punishment for invading Ukraine. But Moscow says the country is weathering the storm. So how is the Russian economy performing? I'm Hashim Arbala and you're listening to the Inside Story podcast, where we dissect, analyze and help define major global stories. Let's bring in our guests from Moscow, Vyacheslav Mishenko, an energy markets and oil gas expert. In Tashkent, Chris Weaver, Chief Executive Officer at the consultancy Macro Advisory. And in Paris, Eric Chani, an economic advisor to Institut Montaigne, a think tank dedicated to public policy in France and Europe. Vyacheslav, how do you explain Russia's resilient economy despite the string of unprecedented Western sanctions?
Yeah, as you mentioned in your coverage, actually, it's better, much better than expected. So I would like to stress that Russian oil and gas still flow abroad. So still, despite all the conversations about the implementing some strong measures and stopping the exports, actually goes. And despite the fact the dependence on Russian gas supply in Europe is very high. So it's over... So Russian market share in Europe is over 30%, and even now just about 40%. In some countries, like Central Eastern Europe, it's more than 80% dependence. It's a gas balance covered by Russian gas. So it means that it's not easy, actually, to break just stop flowing and stop buying and stop having some trading relationship. So and despite the fact all this pressure, all this political, political dispute, it gives, more to the market. It's very nervous about the, stopping and about the not having Russian supply. And it pressures on the prices. And prices give very high profit to Russian oil export and gas export companies.
Chris, the economists were somehow earlier predicting the GDP of Russia to contract by 15%. That does not seem to be the case now. Is it because of, exactly as Vyacheslav was saying, the high revenues when it comes to oil and gas exports that helped cushion against a collapse of the economy?
In a nutshell, that is the reason. You have to look at the Russia story in two parts. There's the financial side and there's the economic side. So as Alexa said, the financial side has remained very strong because we see continuing high prices for commodities, oil and gas, and Russia is continuing to export almost at maximum at this stage. The sanctions have not yet slowed it down. So in the first 4 months of this year, the country ran a trade surplus of $107 billion, a current account surplus of close to $100 billion. And that money, of course, is all coming back to Russia. But on the economic side, we can see deterioration. The economy ministry, the finance ministry are all warning that there will be a big downturn in the economy in Q2. And particularly, they believe the worst will come in Q3. We already hear from companies that they are running short of components. They can't import products. So companies are starting to warn about short-term working, if not even having to shut down. So we will see a rise in unemployment. We have seen a drop in incomes, and that's affecting consumption. So we are still seeing this deterioration in the economy, even though the balance sheet, if you like, is very strong. But right now, it looks like the deterioration is going to be significantly less than had been feared. The economy ministry this week said they expect GDP to contract this year by only about 7.5 to 8%, not 15. Mm-hmm. And that's because the government can afford to continue paying for subsidies.
Eric, the central bank, since the start of the crisis, managed somehow to fend off an economic collapse by increasing the interest rate, limiting the remittances. Can it continue doing that if the sanctions continue for a longer period?
You're right. The decisions taken by Elvira Nabiullina, the head of the Russian Central Bank, and she's very good in her job, was a very tough decision to raise interest rates to 20%. But I think the goal of this tough decision was to help to keep the currency afloat. You might remember that the ruble in the first stage went down quite sharply, and that's why the central bank raised rates to 20%. But of course, there will be huge consequences for the economy. The Russian economy is sensitive to interest rates and to inflation as far as incomes are concerned. And it seems that for Russian companies that cannot borrow from abroad because they are excluded, totally excluded from the Western financial system at least, they can find a lot of money from the central bank. But at 20%, given they are indebted at variable rates, there will be casualties on the corporate side. Mm-hmm. So this monetary policy was, I think, quite smart. And it has helped. That was not the only element. It has helped to keep the ruble where it is, which mm-hmm. is a great success. And I don't think that was expected. But the consequences for the real economy are deeply negative because you cannot have your cake and eat it.
Vyacheslav, the Russians had their own assets abroad. They could tap into those assets to pay for debt. Now, the US Treasury is saying that it will not allow the Russians by the end of this month to further use the financial system to pay for the debt. What is likely to mean for the Russian economy?
And actually, it's called technical default, but it doesn't mean that Russia and Russian authorities, I mean, financial authorities can't pay. They can pay and they're ready to pay. But, you know, this is in the political angle. From the political angle, this is kind of dispute, but technically it's possible. But, you know, it depends on the positions of the parties. I would like to stress again, I would like to add that so the Russian market is in general, I would agree with a colleague of mine that there is a implementation of a financial plan. It goes well, but economical, you know, side, probably we will see some decrease of the economy, as you mentioned, but not to the 8%. It's up to the 5%, which is the latest calculation, actually, for the year. But again, the revenues are huge, and revenues are very strong from the export activities. It's not only oil. It's just all the raw materials and, you know, the markets actually Russia exports. And by the way, Russia is seeking for the new markets. And the you know, interesting information that India has become the number one buy of Russian crude for the last 2 months. So it's actually tripled, even just for the short period of time, the purchase of Russian materials, actually, especially oil. Mm-hmm. That's a very significant deal, actually, for Russia finding new markets.
Chris, the European market has always been crucial for the Russian economy. But what happens next when the Europeans decide it's about time to finally turn their back on the Russian gas and oil?
Okay, first of all, for sure it'll be damaging, but it's important to bear in mind that Russia has been dealing with sanctions since 2014. And back in 2014, Europe was concerned about dependency on Russian energy imports, but Moscow also started to get concerned about the fact that it was also very dependent on Europe as the buyer of its energy. And actually, over the last 8 years, Russia has made a lot of progress, much more than Europe, in diversifying its customer base. So, for example, right now, China is the biggest trade partner of Russia, whereas pre-2014, it was Germany. So therefore, the system to some extent has been diversified. Russia mm-hmm. is no longer as vulnerable to Europe as it used to be. And as a previous speaker said, Russia has now been very proactive, even in the last few months, in looking for new markets. India, as you mentioned, is certainly one that has emerged strongly as a potential buyer. And even if Russia is offering its oil and gas at a discount, bearing in mind that prices are now significantly higher than they have been over the last few years, this is why Russia is now earning a significant amount of money, a trade surplus of $107 billion, say, in the first 4 months this year, and it's running at about 25 to 30 billion a month right now. That gives Russia a significant amount of financial resources to subsidize the economy and to start, if you like, readjusting the economy for long-term sanctions if it needs to.
Eric, is Europe ready for a day when they will phase out Russian energy and supplies, or is it just an issue of political leverage they are using now, and they seem to be not really genuine about severing economic ties with Russia?
Well, I do think that it's more a question of when than a question of if. I think the political shock in Western Europe, but especially in Germany, because the whole energy policy of Germany is based on Russian gas, if you want. It's not only for the production of electricity, it's also for the German industry, which says it's thanks to the Russian gas that we are competitive. That was true. And now everybody has understood that Russia is not a reliable supplier of hydrocarbons, of fossil fuels. The Soviet Union was reliable. Russia is not. When Mr. Putin decides to cut supply, he cuts supply. So I think it's going to happen, but slowly, because Germany made enormous mistakes in its own energy policy by putting its eggs, all its eggs in the Russian pipelines, if you want. But the decision, the political decision is taken, and there is no way I think Europe will shy away from cutting all imports of energy from Russia. Ideally, that should be done immediately, and that is possible. But there is a very strong political resistance from the German industry and from the German socialists to do that. So that will take time.
Okay.
But I think in 1 year time, Europe will have cut its supplies from Russia, will have started to diversify its supplies from other gas suppliers. As far as oil is concerned, it's not a problem because oil is a global market. Gas is much more complicated. And a lot of countries in Europe have decided to relaunch their nuclear plants, with the exception of Germany, of course. So for all these reasons, I think that Europe will be able to get rid of Russian supplies.
I see your point.
It's going to take more time.
Vyacheslav, when you look at the economy now and you see the indicators, prices are soaring, inflation is likely to hit 20%, unemployment is on the rise. Could this be the real indication that there is something wrong with the economy now in Russia?
You know, the things have been moving so fast. We can't rely on this, you know, just the current numbers, actually. Let me just argue one thing I would like to say about a reliable supplier. Actually, we shouldn't lose the chain, the logic chain, actually. So nobody cuts supplies, actually. So the Russian state resource, financial resource, were frozen and seized, actually. And then it has become very hard, actually, to supply the commodities, actually, to European markets in the currency, in euro and in dollars, actually. That the scheme was actually offered to the European buyers, actually, to put the euros on the special accounts and to convert them into rubles. That's the core issue, actually. Nobody stopped and nobody cut the supply, actually. So it still goes there. So, I mean, back to the numbers. I think we will see some recovering. Even now with it just, you know, just the prices, just, you know, just in regular, you know, the Russian stores and the food stores and everything are going better. So they're going back from the shock they used to have in the end of February and then beginning of March. So it was a kind of emotional reaction to the events and, you know, to the political situation. But now it's back to normal, and the ruble is strong, just not because the regulation, but because of the huge, you know, disproportional of trade balance, because Russia exports much more than inputs now because of the restrictions. And that pushes ruble to the level we see since 2018, probably.
All right. Chris, since you've started your conversation with us saying that it's about time to look at the financial aspect from one, on one hand, and the economy on the other hand, when you see the economy with experts saying that you're likely to see 2 million Russians lose their job this year. Couldn't this be the indication that there's going to be a serious structural problem with the Russian economy from now onwards?
Oh, I think there's no doubt the economy is facing structural change. It's clearly there are so many scenarios you could talk about, whether you want to be optimistic or pessimistic, a lot of which will depend on what happens to commodity prices and therefore the government's cash flow, what happens with sanctions, what happens basically on so many aspects which will have an input. But the fact that there will be a structural change in the economy is without doubt. Russia is going to have to become a lot more diversified in its trade and sourcing of materials. It's going to have to find ways to create new areas of employment in the future. And that transition is going to be painful. How painful will depend on how much money the government has in the budget to provide subsidies and to pay for this. And that then critically, of course, is linked to how much commodities that exports and what the price of those commodities will be. So it's too early to say yet as to whether or not there's going to be 2 million people unemployed or 1 million. We do note that the government is very, very focused on job preservation. We saw this week, for example, the announcement from Renault that it is selling its business to a local buyer, and McDonald's, which employs 62,000 people in Russia, has also sold to a local buyer. And we note that the government is providing subsidies is involved in these transactions because it is absolutely focused on job preservations. And as we started the conversation to say, they can afford to do that in the current situation. The question is, how long will that cash flow remain sufficiently large that they will be able to cushion the economy from the more pessimistic scenarios? That's an enormous question mark.
Eric, the West started the sanctions to send a clear political message to the Russian government that they will not tolerate what is happening in Ukraine, the war in Ukraine. But the sanctions themselves are triggering a global economic crisis with the soaring prices, particularly when it comes to food and energy. Could this backfire in a way or another, raising international discontent over what is happening?
Well, that's a very important question, but I would put it slightly differently. It's not only the sanctions. The sanctions are having a deep impact on the Russian economy. They also have an impact on energy prices, as you said. But the fact, for instance, that food prices are rising are absolutely not linked to sanctions. They are caused by the fact that the Russian Navy is blocking Ukrainian exports of wheat. Mm-hmm. So it's the war decided by Russia that is causing this soaring energy and food prices. And I'm afraid that as far as food prices are concerned, the consequences might be very dire for a lot of countries. Think of Egypt, for instance, where the population is really already on very low incomes and very, very quick to go to social and political unrest. So we are going to see a lot of consequences. Could that backfire on the sanctions themselves? I don't think so. There is a huge debate in Germany again about what would happen if Germany cut its supplies of natural gas from Russia. So that will be done progressively. And I think that we are going to have a recession due to this big shock. There is less energy and food supply, but there are also higher prices. So when you put that together, that is one of the reasons of stagflation. Mm-hmm. Okay, but this is going to prove temporary. And that's why I don't think it will lead to second thoughts about the sanctions. Okay. I would even go so far as saying that the sanctions so far have been relatively light. Gazprom Bank is not sanctioned. Sberbank is not sanctioned. So Germany has obtained that it would still be possible for Russia to export its oil and gas in Europe.
Vyacheslav,
so we are going to have more sanctions, not less.
Okay, Vyacheslav, very briefly, if you don't mind. Now, Russia has been working for quite some time on two key assets. One, reasserting itself as a trusted supplier of energy. Two, a key player in the global market. On the two aspects, is suffering now because it's now being more and more isolated from the global financial market. And number two, it's not really widely seen, particularly in Europe, as someone we can trust when it comes to the supply of gas and energy. Could this be the main setback facing the Russian economy in the future?
I don't think so. I think we are on the edge of global changing and changing the markets, actually, the scheme of the markets. And Russian commodities and Russian exports will be looking for the new markets and for the markets with the. So it's not a secret that the key demand is being formed in the Southeast Asia and the countries like Africa, as you mentioned, and not only on the energy, but on the food as well. So my colleague just mentioned wheat. Yes, there will be some troubles actually exporting wheat, and actually Russia implemented some export ban for some period of time, because Russia is the largest exporter of wheat in the world. So, I mean, but still, so demand is there, and the population of global population is growing. So, I mean, so despite the financial troubles and the sanctions, I think sanctions is a dead end. So they did, at the end of the day, they actually harm all the global trade and relationship. I mean, economical.
Thank you.
From the economical side, it's not just the solution. Actually, I think they will be finding new ways and new platform, new technologies. Actually, will be supporting the exports and
gentlemen,
not the financial. Teams.
Gentlemen, we'll have to leave it there. Vyacheslav Mishenko, Chris Weaver, Eric Shani. I really appreciate your insight. Thank you. That's it for the Inside Story podcast. This episode was produced by Calvin Ferdiakar, Ayseba Merzeyeva, and Paul Taylor. Studio sound was by Deepak Pushkaran. The program was edited by Anil Anandan, Lin Nguyen, and Jody Frias. Be sure to subscribe to the Inside Story podcast to catch every episode. Thank you for listening. We'll be back again on Monday.
Hello to all our listeners. In this week's episode on the Essential Middle East podcast, we discuss whether there's a bias in Western media coverage of the killing of Shireen Abu Akleh and Palestine in general. Listen to the episode wherever you get your podcasts.